Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
You're listening to a recording of a live radio show on NPR News. If you want to listen to us in real time, you can stream our show live weekday mornings at 9 a.m. Central. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show.
Good morning. I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News, and I'm glad you're listening this morning. I think you're going to find this show quite useful. This hour, we're going to focus our pandemic coverage on Minnesota and ask some key questions. As we test more Minnesotans, where will we find pockets of the virus lurking? Given the fact that most of Minnesota's deaths from COVID-19 occurred in congregate care facilities, are the state's restrictions at this moment too strict? How is Minnesota preparing for what could be a new season of infections next fall or winter? Two guests and your questions and your consideration. Do the governor's orders still feel proportionate to the threat of the infection? Look around in your neighborhood, think about your community. Would love to hear your thoughts on that. I also imagine, because we're still getting a lot of calls on this, what do you want to know about access to testing in Minnesota? Who should be tested? Where should you go to get those tests? As I've said, we've heard from a number of callers about this, so I welcome your questions on that. So the scope of the governor's orders on restrictions, questions about testing, questions about hospital preparedness, we welcome them all. 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. You can also send in your questions on Twitter. It's at Carrie NPR. Chris Erisman is with us, Director of Infectious Diseases and Epidemiology at the Minnesota Health Department. She's with us from St. Paul. Chris, welcome back. Really good to talk to you again.
Thank you for having me.
Dr. David Hilden is with us. He's Vice President of Medical Affairs at Hennepin Healthcare, HCMC. And he's with us today from Minneapolis. And Dr. Hilden, welcome to you. Good to have you on the show.
Good morning, Carrie. Pleased to be with you today.
Chris, I thought we would just start with where the data is, the number of deaths, the numbers of infections, and if you would zero in on a couple of the hot spots in Minnesota that we ought to be aware of.
Well, we're continuing to see, you know, new cases reported. As of today, we're at 7,850 cases, or excuse me, 8,579 cases.
Okay.
And so we're continuing to see cases reported. We're seeing them from areas that have, right now, long-term care. We're seeing them in long-term care as well as in areas that have large processing plants or manufacturing. So really seeing them where we have groups of people who are either together because of their residence or they're together because they are part of an essential workforce that needs to be working, you know, closely together to accomplish their tasks.
Are there areas where you're seeing an emergence of the virus that you didn't expect and that doesn't lend itself to the kinds of explanations you've just given us, you know, congregate living conditions, working side by side? Are there any areas in the state like that?
No, actually, where we're seeing cases really does fit that pattern of people being close together, whether it's, you know, individuals who are in long-term care or congregate care settings, whether it's prisons or jails, or whether it's workplaces where people are in close proximity. So far, that is where we really have seen our cases focus.
Dr. Hilden, I understand that HCMC is going out into the community to some of these places that Chris Erisman has just talked about to do testing. What are you finding? How are you letting people know that they can come to wherever you're going to be tested?
Indeed, we are, Carrie. One of the things I think that we don't talk quite enough about are the vulnerable populations of our community. When we do talk about it, it seems to be about how, well, yeah, there's more deaths in nursing homes, and isn't that awful? But if we take a more proactive approach, we can do something about that. And so what we are doing and is going out into congregate settings, that would be long-term care facilities, nursing homes, homeless shelters. We are sending out community paramedics, and we are sending out trained nurses to do testing in those facilities. The idea, and then we send their tests back to our hospital where we can get results in just a few hours. And there's really two reasons to do that. The first is because those folks deserve it. We ought to be caring for the vulnerable populations, elders and people with chronic conditions, and the staff who serve them. So that's one reason to do it. But the second reason to do it is that by being proactive and going to those facilities and not so reactive, we can maybe find these hotspots a little bit sooner, and therefore we could contain the pandemic. And so there's that twofold reason for doing it. And it's not being done enough in the state, but we are coordinating with Chris Erisman's group over at MDH and with Hennepin County, and we're really trying to roll it out quite a bit more. And so far, it's really promising.
Dr. Hilton, I'm curious about how nimble you can be with that. I mean, do you get a report perhaps from the Minnesota State Health Department where it looks like some cases have emerged in a jail in, you know, maybe some rural county? Well, you're doing this only within the county, Hennepin County?
Well, right now we're working with Hennepin County,
okay,
but it's a model that could be used statewide.
Got it. Okay. So how nimble do you think that model can be?
I think it can be quite nimble. We have our hospital incident command, which I serve on this week, and we talk every morning. At 7 a.m., we have our operations people meet, and at 8 a.m., we have the larger group meet. And one of the people on that call is our paramedic group. They're awfully nimble just at baseline. They can get out to the community and do things on a moment's notice. So we are able to take community paramedics who are used to doing this in a quick fashion, and we are able to redeploy nurses from areas where they're not needed here. We're not taking nurses from the ICU or their inpatient units. We're taking nurses who are available. And so we're actually able to be quite nimble. We could get this done in hours. We can respond to outbreaks.
Chris, this is something I've been wondering about, whether you still feel that other than the social distancing guidelines, which are proactive, do you feel like you are by necessity in a reactive mode here, or do you feel like there are opportunities to get out ahead of it? Again, aside from the social distancing stuff.
Yes. Well, what we're talking about here with prompt and aggressive testing, that is part of getting out ahead of things. And unfortunately, until, you know, the last weeks, we have not had the capacity to do that. But with increasing laboratory testing capacity, then we do have the ability to, you know, identify a case. If a case is identified in a setting, we can, you know, as was described, get out there and make sure that we're testing, you know, all the other individuals, especially in these settings where people are necessarily in closer proximity, and then that gives us a chance to make recommendations and respond. Because the goal in these settings is, you know, not just to find out if someone is positive, that certainly is part of it, but to make sure that then the appropriate infection prevention and control pieces are implemented. Because testing alone is not sufficient. It has to be combined with the appropriate you know, infection and control activity. So in long-term care, that would include, you know, isolating patients or cohorting patients who are, you know, ill together, patients who are not ill, making sure that they are separated, in a homeless shelter, making sure that individuals have a safe place to be able to self-isolate or quarantine. So it's the complete picture. So we want to make sure that, you know, we have the ability to test, as we're talking about, but then also that testing is part of the broader response, and that there are infection prevention and control guidelines that are implemented.
Yeah. If you've just joined the show, you hear us talking about testing with Chris Ayersman. She's Director of Infectious Diseases and Epidemiology at the Minnesota Health Department. Pretty familiar voice these days. And Dr. David Hilden is with us, Vice President of Medical Affairs at Hennepin Healthcare. We want to talk a bit more about testing in Minnesota. This is a show focused on Minnesota. Questions about who should get tested, who has access to testing, are there enough tests at the moment for everybody who feels like they need a test? We'll welcome your queries on that and anything else you want to know about how Minnesota compares to the rest of the country and how the state possibly is preparing for a second wave. We'll get into that, too. What do you want to know here? 651-227-6000. 800-242-2828, anywhere in the upper Midwest, and on Twitter at CarrieMPR. Some questions here about testing, Chris. As we reopen, taking workers' temperatures, looking for signs of COVID that spreads before we show any symptoms, don't we need more testing? He adds, I don't know anyone who's been tested, let alone tested a second or third time.
Yes. So the goal is increased testing, and right now we have been working with a number of the workplaces, you know, meatpacking, other kind of plants, to talk about the aggressive screening that really needs to happen for their employees when they're coming to work. So looking for any signs and symptoms of COVID, not just a fever that reaches 100.4, but any signs and symptoms, and then referring those individuals for testing. But it is true that we have not had the testing capacity that we have needed in the state. And so as that testing becomes more available, we want to make sure that we're using it in the best way possible. So we're looking at making sure the goal was to have everyone who's symptomatic be able to be tested.
Okay.
We're not at that point yet.
Okay.
And so we're focusing on these high-risk and vulnerable populations. But this individual does make a good point, and that is that if someone tests negative, it's important to keep in mind that that result is for that day only. So in other words, if you're symptomatic and you test positive, that's sort of a neat package. You had the symptoms and you've tested positive, and now we need to, you know, you need to be isolated and we need to look at your contacts, that type of thing. If you test negative, that means that for that day you were negative. That doesn't mean that in 2 days you might not develop symptoms. And so that's what the challenge is that as we're ramping up testing, if we're testing individuals who are asymptomatic, we're going to have to keep testing them on a regular basis.
Right.
So that's a thing that has to be kept in mind. And so that's why we're focusing on, right now, at least putting energies into places like congregate care, where with one case, if you test the facility, that can have a big impact on how you care for those patients. And that's why the work that Hennepin is doing is so valuable.
So Dr. Hilden, let's say I live in Hennepin County. I am not showing symptoms. Doesn't mean I don't have it, but, you know, I could be asymptomatic. But I have reason to believe that I have been exposed. Can I get a test?
It depends, Carrie. We would have you come into one of our clinics and where we offer testing, and, you know, throughout the metro area, we're doing it at our various clinics, or we would have you come down to our viral screening clinic here on our downtown campus, and we would take a fairly thorough history, because it is subtle sometimes. And if you are considered to be high risk, maybe you are with a positive person and you're living there and your risk very high, you very well could probably get a test. What we can't have is just everybody who just wonders for the reasons that Chris just explained. Your test is only as good as that day. So we're not just taking people, anybody off the street who would like a test and saying, sure, here you go. That wouldn't be a cost-effective use of our resources. But we would take a thorough history. And if you're at risk, we would.
Let me take some calls here to Juanita in Bemidji. Hi, Juanita. Thanks for calling and waiting. Yeah, what are you curious about?
I have two components. I'm a public health nurse by education and experience of 50 years.
Okay.
And I worked as a public health nurse in Minnesota on reservations and off reservations. There are public health nurses in every county, and every reservation has one or more. And we seem to know the areas, especially if you're testing rural areas.
Mm-hmm.
We know where the population would meet and greet and could be tested. I'm wondering why PHNs aren't being utilized. And also for the follow-up, for the tracking, I'm wondering if Minnesota has considered using the census takers that were trained. I know thousands of them were trained and can't do census now.
Census takers.
Those are
okay.
My two components.
All right.
PHNs for testing.
Gotcha.
And census takers for tracking.
So, Chris, to the question about why we're not using public health nurses as more of a strategy to understand where and how the virus is spreading.
Well, we certainly are working with our public health partners, and they're an important part of the response. So, oftentimes they will hear about something happening in their community even faster than we do, because obviously the results go directly to the clinic and the patient. They do come to us electronically, but you know, by the time it goes through the queue and we call the person, oftentimes local public health will know faster than us, and so they will reach out. So we are connecting with them. The one thing that I'll say about using public health nurses to swab, that could be effective if they were part of a team. But in addition to just collecting the specimens, we need to make sure that there are evaluations, that there is the medical director, that the whole process is kind of wrapped into a team, because it's not, again, not just the test results. There's the evaluation, there's the calling the patients back with those results. So we want to make sure that it's comprehensive. So while they would be an excellent part of a team and in a region could be very valuable, we do want to make sure that it is a team that's connected to a larger medical infrastructure.
Okay.
And then in terms of the census takers, you know, we are looking at how we can ramp up, and we have a team that is evaluating what the best next steps would be for the expanded case and contact investigations that are needed. And so they're looking at all of those kinds of options.
Dr. Hilden, a call here for you from Jean in St. Cloud. Jean, it sounds like you're also a nurse. Good to have your call.
Yeah, I have two questions or comments.
Okay.
One is that I'm at a small assisted living facility,
mm-hmm.
and one of our employees' sister, who she lives with, was positive.
Okay.
So when I called to see if she could get tested, well, not if she doesn't have any symptoms. Well, by the time she has symptoms, she's already exposed it to our whole facility.
Got it.
But, yeah, there's no way that I could get her in to have anything done. The second question or comment is that a couple of times our residents have gone to the emergency room or have been admitted to the hospital, and they won't do any testing because they don't have any symptoms. So then when I say, well, when they come back, we try to isolate them for at least 5 days. But when I ask for recommendations, they always say, oh, it's up to your facility.
Oh.
Well, we don't have an infection control department.
Okay.
We don't have an infection control nurse. And I just think that couldn't the medical facilities with all these experts at least give us some recommendations like, oh, you don't really need to quarantine her, she's fine.
Got it.
But more, you know, 5 days would be appropriate. We get no recommendations. We have to struggle. And, you know, it's just, I'm the only RN, and I just am on call and part-time. So it is really, really difficult. It feels like long-term care and assisted living are just being neglected and forgotten.
Okay, so two good questions, Jean. I'm going to put the first one, which is, again, you might be asymptomatic, but you feel like you've been exposed, and you have the capacity, Dr. Hilden, to maybe expose a number of vulnerable people to it, and yet still being told you can't get a test. Is that going to change, do you think, with increasing availability of these tests?
I would hope so. And to Jean's point, first of all, I'd be remiss if not in acknowledging today is the first day of National Nurses Week, and I want to thank each and every nurse out there.
I'm glad you reminded us, okay?
including you, Jean. Thank you so much. You're the heroes of medicine, really, nurses. But as for the testing question, ideally, we would do that. Ideally, we would have a strike force team that goes into places and says, okay, we had an employee positive. Let's talk about everybody that person's been around. Let's test all the people with symptoms first, but then let's develop a team-based strategy to find out who else needs to be tested. In an ideal situation, we would do that, but a lot of what our testing is a little bit behind. Ideally, we would have started this, in February, but we didn't have supplies and we didn't have a coordinated effort from nationally. But that is where we ought to be going. Jean is correct. We ought to be working on targeted support of testing for people in long-term care facilities and to give you advice about how to proceed. You can't test everybody who's asymptomatic because, indeed, that is, like Chris said, it's only good for that day. But we could be smart about it and be targeted about who gets tested, who is high risk. And in so doing, we could perhaps help long-term care facilities with the questions Jean just said.
But Dr. Hilton, just to emphasize this, at the moment when you're saying we could be doing this, we don't have the capacity of testing to do that yet.
That's correct. Okay. We simply aren't there enough where we can do just widespread testing. We're shooting for 20,000 tests a day, which is a great stretch goal. I know at my hospital we're doing up to 1,000 tests a day here at one hospital in Minneapolis, but we just don't have the capacity to widespread throughout the state. And then we wouldn't know how to follow up and trace all those. So we have to develop a system.
Good. We're going to get to contact tracing here a little later in the show. Chris, just I don't want to forget Jean's other question, which was about if we don't have an infection control regimen in our small nursing home or assisted living, we feel like we're kind of at sea. We're not getting enough guidelines from the state.
Right. And so I'm glad you allowed me to comment because I want Jean to know that we have been having calls since March 4th with they're open to all congregate care, so that would include assisted living. So we have weekly calls in which we're going over materials, providing guidance. So that's an opportunity, where you can actually hear from someone. We have a great deal of guidance on our website for these facilities, and we do have a provider hotline that he could call and reach out, and we could help provide additional information that way. So we don't want him to feel like he's out there alone, and we do have a lot of resources. So
okay.
Would encourage him to take advantage of that.
I want to grab a call here from Randy in St. Cloud. Hi, Randy. What are you curious about?
Yeah, so from what I can tell from the state's website, 95% of the deaths have been above age 60, mm-hmm. and at 500 deaths, that means 25 people under the age 60 have died. So I'm just wondering, how can 2 months of shutdown be justified with all the damages being done? Damages including, psychological, economical, quality of life, and all the cancellations of social venues like weddings, commencements, along with 600,000 people applying for unemployment in that time.
Okay.
I'm just kind of curious.
Randy,
we've had
a number of calls about why couldn't the restrictions be more targeted, Chris? I'm glad you're here to answer that. What would you say?
I would say that my job, and my team's job at the department is to provide, an epidemiologic perspective to the governor, to the commissioner, and other senior advisors. And then they take that information from us and they weigh it along with information from public safety, the Department of Economic Development, and other information from other state, local, and national partners. And so the governor takes all of that into account in making his decisions. And so, we certainly have provided epidemiologic data, but there are other considerations, and so I have to defer to the wisdom of that team.
Dr. Hilton, would you want to take a swing at that, too?
I would. We always said a couple of months ago that if 2 or 3 months from now we wondered what the big deal was all about, we were successful. The reason our numbers of deaths are what they are and our cases are because of what we're doing. And there's not a whole lot of controversy about that part. It is also a true thing, though, and the caller is correct. This has extraordinary economic and psychological impact on our state. But in 2 months, a disease has killed more people in our country than wars have in decades. And so if we had not done what we are doing, it would be much, much worse. And I'm also of the strong belief that we need to be exceptionally careful about all residents of Minnesota, including those vulnerable ones. And I'm not at the point where I'm willing to say I'm going to accept the deaths of people that we could have prevented, regardless if they're in a vulnerable position. And so I think that we should be targeted in how we open. We should recognize that not all communities are hit equally, but we also have to recognize that what we're doing is working.
Yeah. I just want Randy to know that there are members of the state legislature who are asking similar questions. Representative Karen Housley said this to the Strib. I don't know why the whole state has to be on stay at home when we should be quarantining and testing those people in long-term care facilities if that's where the hot spots are. To make the rest of us stay home and not be able to go to the local retail shop and try on jeans there, but we can go to Target or Walmart or Costco, it means our Main Street businesses are dying. Let me ask it this way, Dr. Hilden, before we move on. Let's say there is a new round of infections in the fall and winter. Are we at that point, do you think, going to have enough access to testing that we can be more targeted and we may not have to do such widespread across the board restrictions or not, because a second wave means the virus is lurking in places we didn't expect?
I'm hopeful that that's the case, Carrie, that we're learning about this disease and we're learning about how to protect ourselves. So I think we're going to have to figure out a new normal. It didn't turn out to be like a Mount Everest peak and then a drop. What we're having is more like a roller coaster with ups and downs, and we're still on the general upward climb. It is highly likely that we'll see more peaks this fall and this winter and for years to come. And we're going to have to find ways to target our interventions to the communities that are currently seeing them. Currently, one of the biggest at-risk communities in Minnesota, in the nation, is Stearns County, Minnesota. That's where so that's where we should be focusing on. That's St. Cloud area.
Right.
And so we maybe can target our interventions as we go forward. We are not going to be in a universally safe place with vaccines and herd immunity for a matter of 1, 2, 3 years. So we need to come up with ways to reopen our economy that are as safe as possible. Also, we can't just quarantine people in long-term care facilities. There are workers that are going home to their families and they are interacting with our communities. So quarantining people in long-term care facilities and not looking at the larger population would not be an effective strategy.
Two guests on the air this hour with a lot of healthcare policy experience, a lot of healthcare experience. Chris Ayersman from the Minnesota Health Department, Dr. David Hilden from Hennepin County Healthcare, taking your questions about testing and the breadth of the restrictions. I want to ask Chris and David on the other side of news about contact tracing. We're hearing that when we can do some of that, we will really understand about how the disease spreads and we will try to be more proactive about it, try to get ahead of it. I want to know how realistic that is. And we're taking more of your calls and questions. We're back to our conversation now with Chris Ayersman and Dr. David Hilden. And let me go back to the phones to Leah in St. Paul. Hi, Leah. I know it's been a while. Glad you waited.
Hi there.
Hey, what do you want to know?
I want to know why customers and staff at grocery stores are not required to wear masks. When I asked a manager the other day, he said, well, it's not the law. We can't make people do it. And he was not wearing a mask. And I said to one shopper, I'd appreciate if you would wear a mask. And he said, I don't believe in masks. I'm a 70-year-old retired nurse with a lot of health problems, including I am a cancer survivor, And going through all that, I don't want to die of COVID now. So please make an executive order or pass a law.
Okay. About masking, Leah, Chris, how are you thinking about who to ask to be wearing masks? We seem to get conflicting advice on this.
Well, certainly the priority for masking is as personal protective equipment for healthcare workers and individuals working in those settings. And so that is where the priority for providing those resources is and has been and will continue to be. But there is the option of wearing a mask for what is referred to as source control. And what that means is that the cloth masks that you see people wearing, I have one here in my office, I wear that mask, and it doesn't protect me from other people, but it does protect them from me. So in other words, it serves as sort of a catcher's mitt for any secretions or, you know, that I may be inadvertently sharing. It doesn't have the same effect as personal protective equipment. It wouldn't be considered that, but we call it, you know, kind of an extra belt and suspenders approach. So we're recommending, obviously, that people are staying at least 6 feet away from others, social distancing, but then adding the mask as sort of an additional thing that would help to protect other people. There's a lot of debate scientifically as to exactly what impact wearing masks does have, and so we have continued to encourage people to do that.
Catcher's mitt is a great way to describe that, Chris. That's an image that will last with me. What were you going to add? Sorry to interrupt.
I wanted, when Dr. Hilden commented on Stearns County, I wanted to acknowledge that we are seeing a lot of cases in Stearns County, but wanted to acknowledge that that has been due to really heavy targeted testing in two facilities there. So we're testing hundreds of people, again, in a workplace setting where people are close together and have had the opportunity to be exposed. So just wanted to clarify that
okay.
as well.
Dr. Hilden, from Doug on Twitter, when we get to the 20,000 tests, I think he means per day, do those tests identify who has had the virus, or is it just focused on who has it? And, of course, given again what Chris said about, yeah, that's only for that day and it's not telling us what may happen in a couple days. And he adds, is there a projection of where testing will be in Minnesota by September?
For the first part of Doug's question, and I will let Chris would be better positioned to answer
sure.
the second part about where we might be. But the first part is it is indeed, do you have the virus at the time of your testing? It is the antibody test that people have heard a lot about that detects whether you've had it in the past. And that is an emerging area of research, an emerging area of clinical practice on antibody testing. That's entirely different. What we're talking about here is molecular testing, where we look for the genetic fingerprint of the virus inside the back of your throat and your nasal pharynx. And so we see if the virus is residing in you at that moment. And that's what those 20,000 tests would be. Where we are going to be in a few months, I think I would leave that to the epidemiological experts at MDH.
Chris, what would you say?
Well, our goal is to ramp up to the 20,000 tests. And I think once we're at that point, we'll just see what the capacity is. I mean, there is a limit to what the capacity can be. And I think Dr. Hilde made a good point about we're talking about the molecular testing. The goal is that ultimately there would be antibody testing available that would allow us to say, yes, you've had COVID. And that is a different testing methodology. And so the thought is that you could test 100,000 people a day for that. So that would have a much greater capacity. But the challenge is, and as he alluded to, there's a lot more to be learned about that. And so when we look at whether or not someone has evidence of antibodies to the virus that causes COVID, what we don't know is what level of antibody, so what quantitative amount of antibody is necessary to confer protection going forward.
Oh, interesting.
And then The other question is just what the duration of that protection would be. So right now at the department, we are looking at how we could use antibody testing to do what we refer to as a prevalence survey. So, you know, looking at certain populations and doing some testing to say, you know, based on these data, it would suggest that this proportion of the population has been infected with COVID. Now, we can't say if they have protection or how long it will last, but at least it would give us a more complete picture of what has been happening in Minnesota, because as we've acknowledged, you know, we haven't had the molecular testing. But yes, right now our goal is to ramp up that molecular testing so that we can identify people who have COVID right now.
Okay. Dr. Hilton, before we grab another call here, Mike Osterholm from the U of M was on the show on Monday. And you've probably seen that he has been warning that the virus is really only going to be stopped after, I don't know, somewhere between 60-70% of us have been exposed. And of course, we talked about the whole flattening the curve is so hospitals like yours aren't overwhelmed by demand in the moment. But I want you to hear what he said about, you know, ultimately that many of us are going to have to be exposed. Listen.
In Minnesota, my best guesstimate is probably about 5% of the population has been infected at most.
Okay.
If you look at some of the sero surveys around the country, that's a long ways to get from 5% to 60 to 70%. And by the way, once we get to 60 or 70%, the transmission just slows down. It doesn't stop.
Do you agree that those numbers may reach 60 to 70% of us have ended up being exposed, and that may be the only way to stop it?
I think so, and that's going to take some time, because herd immunity is a scientific phenomenon by which the virus just peters out in the population for lack of hosts, because not enough of us are vulnerable anymore.
Right.
And this virus started out a few months ago with the entire population of planet Earth vulnerable to it, and it's going to take a while for us to get to that herd immunity, and there's two ways to do that. You can just let the virus run rampant. They're trying to do that in Sweden, but that's going to result in untold number of deaths. So the price for letting it do it naturally is going, that would take a long time and it would result in a lot of deaths. The other way to do it is through a vaccine, and that is the safer way and perhaps more humane way to do it. So those two things, the combination of more of us getting infected and the development eventually of a vaccine, will lead to a herd immunity phenomenon when 60, 70% of the population has been exposed. But I think we're quite a ways down the road until that happens.
Sounds like it. Yeah. Call here from Ted in St. Louis Park. Hi, Ted. What are you interested in?
Well, my wife has been telling me to call Cipro. And I went to Barcelona with a group of, with a soccer team, mm-hmm. parents and kids,
yep.
end of December. And second week, an illness shot through the team that I had never seen before, including me. And when I got back, I went to the doctor with breathing issues. Mm-hmm. And he said, well, you got something. It's a virus, but it's not the flu. And, you know, similar to your last question, could it be that this has been here a little bit longer? And would this be something Cipro would like to know?
So, in other words, could you get an antibody test having had the kind of exposure you think you did?
Correct.
Okay. Chris, would he be eligible for an antibody test?
Yeah, the goal would be that we think that there are likely situations in which there was spread before we actually detected it. We've heard of other situations like that. In fact, individuals where if we look at the epidemiologic trace of transmission, we go from a case that was confirmed with COVID and work our way back to someone who had an early travel history much earlier than we were detecting cases in Minnesota, and they're all epidemiologically linked. So, yes, we do think that things like that were likely happening both in Minnesota and in the country. I think that in terms of whether or not Ted would be eligible for antibody testing, at this point, as I said, we don't have a good understanding of what that testing would mean. And so you could test somebody and say it's likely you had a past infection, but we don't know if it means you have protection.
Hey, Chris,
and we don't. Yep.
Are you outside now?
No, I am
sitting in my office.
Well, that's weird. We've got a lot of wind noise all of a sudden here.
It's probably me.
Dr. Hilton, you're walking outside.
No, this is Ted. I'll walk back.
Okay, I'm sorry. Dog. I thought we... I'm glad you heard the answer to that. Let me add here from Dr. Ann, who says on Twitter, don't forget, no test is 100%. Current false negativity of PCR tests, if you have the coronavirus now, is about 30%. And Dr. Hilton, we heard from, I think, Dr. Osterholm on Monday that these antibody tests have a high false positivity. How confident are you that these antibody tests are going to be all that valuable?
Eventually, they're going to be. But there are oodles of antibody tests out there that are being developed, dozens. Maybe it's into the hundreds now. And they are not all equal. So there are cross-reactivity to other coronaviruses. This is not the first coronavirus. There have been many other strains. This is just a new strain. And so they can cross-react with those. And we don't know how they're standardized. So the tests that are being developed by reputable academic institutions, like the University of Minnesota, like Mayo Clinic, these will be rigorously tested, and I think they'll be reliable. I personally had one. I had it done a couple of weeks ago because I've been exposed to COVID, and it's part of a national CDC research project of 16 hospitals in the country of healthcare workers who were potentially exposed. And so those kinds of tests are scientifically rigorous. We'll learn a lot from them about how durable the antibody response is, how quickly it develops, who's at risk. We will learn a ton from those, and eventually those antibody tests will be reliable. But it's a little bit of the Wild West out there now with all the tests that are floating around.
Yeah, for sure. Call here from Chuck in Deerwood. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning.
Hi. What'd you want to say? What'd you want to add to this?
I just wanted to thank Chris for all the work her team and she has done in this whole effort, and pass on my thanks to the governor. We've been listening to the briefings every day at 2 o'clock, and I'm impressed with the amount of respect he has for the questioners and his ability to speak in a complete sentence.
So, Chris, kudos to you for the work you've done. And again, thanks for taking time to be with us today, because you're busy.
I will be sure to pass that to the team. There is a huge team here that have been working tirelessly for months, and I will let them know.
All right.
Thank you.
A call from Pat in Mendota Heights. Hi, Pat.
Hello. Say, my question is, it appears we're missing a very key statistic, and that is the percentage of positive tests to the total tests administered, which shows the rate of infection in our population. And I hear health officials say, you know, don't be alarmed that positive cases are going up because we're doing more testing. But we also have to think, if that percentage is increasing, it can be a concern, which I believe it is. I think the percentage is going up. And unfortunately, you can't determine that percentage on the Minnesota Department of Health website.
Okay. So, Pat, I'm a little tight on time. I do want to give Chris a chance to answer. Chris, what is the response to that?
Well, we do look at the positivity rate for testing, and what we see is that if you're looking overall at all tests, you know, you have a positivity rate that's, you know, 3 to 10%. But when we do testing in a facility, as Dr. Hilden was talking about, where there's been a case and we're wanting to see what's going on, we see positivity rates that are much higher. So there's a difference between an overall positivity rate across the whole population if we were able to test sort of equally and randomly across the population, and then there's the positivity rate when we are testing at a plant where we know there's transmission or in a facility where we know there may be transmission. So it depends on the setting, and perhaps Dr. Hilden would like to comment.
Yeah, Dr. Hilden, real briefly, if you would.
Yeah, it is all about the pre-test probability. If we're going into a hot spot, it's going to be a much higher percentage than if we were to do the whole population. I just would like to add on that our Minnesota Department of Health is among the nation's most accomplished. We in the clinical practice look to MDH for advice, and we should be so thankful for the group at Minnesota Department of Health and for our state leaders who are leading us through this, including on issues of testing, just like this.
Yeah, Chris, can't thank you enough for the hour. Please come back, but thank you for spending it with us today.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Dr. Hilden, good to have you on for the hour. Thanks so much for the perspective.
Thank you so much for having the conversation, Carrie.
Dr. David Hilden with us from Hennepin Healthcare, and of course, Chris Ayersman, Director of Infectious Diseases and Epidemiology at the Minnesota Health Department.
You just heard a recording of a live radio show from NPR News. You can add your voice to the discussion by calling in at 800-242-2828 or tweeting us at Carrie, K-E-R-R-I, NPR. To hear more conversations like this, subscribe to our podcast. And thanks!